your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Take another look at me. Let it go beyond skin deep. Take another look and see I'm beautiful. I'm beautiful. I am so beautiful.
Good afternoon and welcome to Savor Yourself Beyond Skin Deep with your host, Doris Smeltzer. What does it mean to truly love the skin you're in? Keep listening and find out. Now, here's your host, Doris Smeltzer.
As mentioned at the start of each show, the journey that has brought me to Savor Yourself Beyond Skin Deep began when our 19-year-old daughter, Andrea, died of bulimia 8 years ago. We begin and end each show with her words, as she is the reason I am here. For her words today, we're going to go back in time to 4 days before Andrea's 14th birthday, when she made the following journal entry. She wrote, "I have a wonderful life and an even better one ahead of me." And then she quotes from an advice columnist, "Goals do far more for our world and for our character than gifts have ever done." So go for your dreams, dear reader, and let me know what happens. Andrea explains, that was in a newspaper. It was the advice the writer had for the person. I love that, and I believe it with all my heart. My dreams are slowly starting to come true. I love taking that clipping out and reading it. So go for your dreams, dear reader, and let me know what happens. Our goal for today is to hear how we can jump off the dieting roller coaster through intuitive eating. The phenomenal guest who's going to help us make that leap is Evelyn Triboli, an award-winning registered dietitian with a nutrition counseling practice specializing in eating disorders, located in Irvine, California. Evelyn is a prolific author with 6 books under her belt, and I'm going to read the copies of all of them because they're wonderful. She has the million-copy bestseller, Healthy Homestyle Cooking, Stealth Health, More Healthy Homestyle Cooking, Healthy Homestyle Desserts, Eating on the Run, which is impressively in its third edition, and she co-authored the groundbreaking book, Intuitive Eating. Her career includes having worked as a contributing editor for Shape Magazine, as a nutrition expert for Good Morning America, and the national spokesperson for the American Dietetic Association. Harper's Bazaar, Self, and Red Book magazines have rated Evelyn one of the best nutritionists in the country. She is a sought-after expert who has been featured in the media hundreds of times, including appearances on CNN, The Today Show, and Fox News, and in the well-known periodicals USA Today, LA Times, and People Magazine. Evelyn is currently the nutritionist for LifetimeTV.com. To find her on the web, go to EvelynTriboli.com. That's EvelynTriboli.com. Welcome, Evelyn.
Thank you so much, and wow, what an introduction. Let's do it again, just kidding.
I have to say, I just am so impressed with everything you've done, I couldn't leave any of it out.
Oh, thank you. I have a real passion for the work that I do.
You do. And I love that you really do enjoy what you do.
Oh, I do. I do. You know, and especially with the work with intuitive eating, and that's where most of my counseling is, the work is so transformative. You know, you don't, when you start at baseline, you come out in a whole other place, and it's just so exciting to be a witness and facilitator of that process.
So, tell us, what is intuitive eating?
Well, intuitive eating, you know, it's funny, Elise and I, my co-author, Elise Rush, we came up with this concept a long time ago in 1995, and we could not decide, first of all, what to call this book or this process. You know, it was kind of known as the non-dieting approach, but what's that? We bounded over some ideas, and then it came out to intuitive eating. In other words, this is a process where you harness your body's natural ability to eat when you're hungry, stop when you're full. And I realize at the surface that sounds so simple, but in today's complex lifestyle and societal expectations, it is a very, very difficult thing to do because we're so plugged into culture expectations of fitness and this idea that, you know, we can drop weight any way we want to and sculpt our bodies. And yet over and over and over again, the research keeps showing us that this does not work. Dieting does not work. And furthermore, it can really cause a lot of harm.
Oh, it certainly can. But do you think it's really possible to eat intuitively in our current toxic food environment?
You know, I do, and I've been asked that question many times. And there's been some research out of one of the Ivy League universities whose name escapes my tongue right now, kind of basically saying, you know what, in today's world, we live in a toxic food environment. You know, fast food on every corner, commercials up the wazoo, you know, portion sizes that are, you know, triple and quadruple what we'd ever thought they would be. And my answer is, yes, it's possible to eat intuitively in this environment. However, it takes an extra level of mindfulness than what it used to do. And frankly, you know, we hear all this stuff about, oh my gosh, the portions are so big, that's why we're having weight problems. But the truth is, if we were really cued in to hunger and fullness, and we knew we can have food whenever we want to, it wouldn't matter if they served you a 20-pound steak or a 10-ounce steak. You would still stop when you're full, and the rest would be left for, you know, another time.
That is so true. Indeed. But what's the harm in dieting?
Well, there are so many levels of harm, and gosh, from the number one fact is that it doesn't work. You know, and you might be thinking, well, gosh, we hear studies all the time saying, well, these people followed this diet and they lost X amount of pounds. And one of the gold standards anytime we see research coming out on weight loss diets or weight loss of any kind of sort of management is how long did this take place and how long did they sustain the so-called weight loss. And the real benchmark is 2.5 years. And the studies that usually are coming out have been, you know, go on for like maybe 6 months or maybe for a year. So it's not really a good hallmark. The thing that really concerns me is all the new research coming out on teenagers and children and what happens to them if they begin a diet. And what studies have shown is they can start a diet, let's say, when they're a freshman, and when the researchers go back and follow up and see what's happening when they're a senior, they find out that the kids that started dieting, those are the kids that are going to be more likely having binge problems. They will most likely have weight problems. And what they found, and this astounds me, is that dieting predicts weight gain. Mm. And these weren't kids that were overweight to begin with. And I just wish there was like this public knowledge or health information that, you know what, if you diet, you have a high risk of becoming overweight. And I think it would make people at least think twice before embarking on something like that. And, you know, it's when I see these patients in my office as adults in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and all the harm that dieting causes, they get to a point where they can't even diet anymore. You know, they can only last maybe on a day, where before maybe they lasted for a couple of months. Psychologically and physically, they just can't, and their weight keeps getting higher and higher and higher, and they feel so disconnected. And the thing I hear over and over again, it's like, oh my gosh, I need to learn how to eat all over again. I don't know how to eat. And that's the one thing that dieting does. It doesn't teach you that. It teaches you rules, external rules, you know, eat so much of this, eat because it's this time, not about, gosh, what's satisfying for me, what sounds good, what's going to sustain me. So instead, it ends up disconnecting you. And I think probably the study that really just blows me away over and over again, even though it was published in the 40s, was when they did basically a dieting type of study on college men. And these college men, just to be able to participate in the study, had to pass these, you know, medical exams and psychological exams, and it turns out they were super-duper healthy. And the scientists put them on an equivalent of a diet of around 1,700 calories a day. And then 6 months later, yep, they lost weight. They also got malnourished, and the part that really gets me is how they became obsessed about food. Uh-huh. They started collecting recipes and cookbooks. And remember, this is in the 40s. We didn't have all this, like, you know, TV food chefs going bam and all that kind of stuff. And they became isolated and obsessed and increasing exercise. And so this is the first time we've really seen what the biological and psychological effect is when we restrict eating from our body.
I remember reading that study as well, and how there was also the hoarding of food.
Yes.
And binging, as you say.
Absolutely, and that's the thing that really gets me too. I didn't even mention this. You're absolutely right. Some of the men in the study could not stand the rules of this diet. So one went out and binged on milkshakes. Another one went out and stole candy and binged on that. And these guys would feel so guilty, they'd make themselves throw up, you know. And we're talking, that's an eating disorder behavior, you know,
yeah.
Bulimia. And this is before it was even really talked about, known in a public arena as it is now.
Gosh. You know, how I wish that, you know how we're constantly seeing headlines about the obesity epidemic?
Oh, yeah.
If we could just see a headline that states, dieting equals weight gain.
Right, that's right. The dieting epidemic, the cost of dieting.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think there are so many industries that would squash that, but...
Well, and I think that's part of the problem. In fact, Gina Colata, New York Times writer, wrote a really great book last year talking about that very thing, and that is, you know, the economics that are goes along with the diet industry. And the part that really took me by surprise is also the economics of the research going on. You know, scientists do their, you know, they work, they make their living by doing studies, and so they tend to get kind of tied in with this whole industry as well. And frankly, I think it's a mess.
I think you're right, absolutely. You know, it's interesting. When I talk with dietitians, often what I'll hear is, well, intuitive eating is ridiculous. It's not possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you expose a child to whatever they want, they're not going to make healthy choices. And after the break, I want us to talk about that. But in the before... one of the things that has always struck me is that I know that as a therapist, and I'm a marriage and family therapist intern, what I know is I can never take a client beyond where I've gone.
Ah.
And sometimes when I look at the behaviors of the nutritionists who make those comments to me,
mm-hmm.
I look at their behaviors and I think, oh my gosh. They're saying it's impossible because they are not able to do it.
Mm.
Because there's some disordered eating in their behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's interesting that even from dietitians and nutritionists, we get mixed messages.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's frustrating.
But you know what, I think what's important, you know, when you look at any profession, you know, there's certainly specialty areas, and if these are nutritionists that are saying this, but they do, their area is cardiovascular health, or they do diabetes or something like that, they might not be as clued in, and they're making comments on information that perhaps they haven't really read the research on, and yet I absolutely agree, because on a basic level, you would think, my gosh, someone who has a basic understanding of nutrition science should know, you know, it's possible to eat when you're hungry, stop when you're full.
Yeah.
And you know, anytime I hear that from a parent, or a professional, to me it also just shows they don't trust their own bodies.
See, I think that's the key. And
yeah.
With that, we're going to go to break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about rigid family rules
mm-hmm.
around food. Come back.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Savor yourself. Get more information on eating disorders and body image issues at andreasvoice.org. To purchase Doris's critically acclaimed book, Andrea's Voice, Silenced by Bulimia, go to andreasvoice.org, the GERS Books website at bulimia.com, or any bookstore.
on Soul Mind Body Medicine, Dr. Zi Gong Sha teaches a breakthrough soul healing system that empowers people to heal themselves and to heal others. Each week, learn new soul healing wisdom, knowledge, and practice that will transform your life. Dr. Sha offers listeners his personal remote soul healing during each show, Soul Mind Body Medicine with Dr. Zi Gong Sha, broadcast every Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
With thousands of homes destroyed or damaged by fire, lots of people are wondering what to do next. If you are a wildfire survivor, SoCalHelp.org can help you find support and decide what to do right now, wherever you are. This easy-to-use website is a place you can go to get immediate help with food, shelter, and important medications and start getting your life back on track. Get help now with insurance, legal issues, and find professional services like doctors and counselors. You can access contact information for national agencies, hotlines, and services that have the resources you need. You can also connect with other survivors and people who can help. For the answers and support you need to rebuild, visit SoCalHelp.org.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Take another look and see I'm beautiful. Beautiful is me.
Welcome back to Savor Yourself Beyond Skin Deep with host Doris Smeltzer. If you have a question or comment for Doris, write to her at doris@savoryourself.org. Now back to today's show.
We are back with Evelyn Triboli, author, presenter, and award-winning registered dietitian specializing in eating disorders. And I promised that after the break, Evelyn, we would I'd have you describe the effect of rigid family rules for, and I'm putting healthy eating in quotes, on a child's ability to self-regulate their own eating.
You know, it's such an important issue right now. We keep getting messages, and I say we as the public, about, oh, we have an epidemic on obesity. We have to have a war on obesity. And there's been, you know, commercials aimed at parents of kids on what's going to happen to them. In fact, even TV shows, if they don't do something now. And it's a real big dilemma, I feel, for the parents, because what are they supposed to do? And, you know, they want their kids to be healthy. They don't want them to have any kind of disorders in terms of, you know, diabetes and heart disease. And so a well-meaning parent, I like to stress that, well-meaning parent, that's what I see over and over again, they implement well-meaning rigid rules. It might be something like no desserts allowed in the house, no sugar, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And what is remarkable is there's so much research that's out there, especially from Leanne Birch's work in Pennsylvania, that the more a parent interferes with the child's eating, the more likely they're going to have a problem with eating, the more likely they're going to have a weight problem, and the very foods that the parents are limiting are the very ones the kid starts to obsess about. And I think it's a real delicate balance between, wow, how we foster healthy, quote, nutritious eating, and at the same time allow our kids to develop a sense of mastery of honoring their own body's cues of hunger and fullness. And when a parent doesn't trust themselves, if they've grown up with their own, you know, weight issues and they don't want their child to suffer from maybe the teasing and some of the problems they've had, it's a real tough nut to crack. You know, one story I'm fond of telling as a parent, my son at the time, I think he was about 2 or 3, just this little itty-bitty guy. And, you know, I made a family meal, very nice dinner, and made, you know, some carrot cake for dessert. And I served us all the same size, and I'll be darned. He finishes, you know, his dinner and finishes the whole piece of carrot cake and says, Mommy, I want more. And the mommy in me wanted to say no, but the health professional, the intuitive part of me, says, well, let's see what happens. And I'm so glad I did that, because I gave him a second piece the same size, and you know what? He ate one bite, and he goes, I'm done. It's a very, very powerful experience, and that's the bottom line. Maybe someone just needs, you know, a portion and a bite, you know? But right. If someone has all this fear, like, oh, my gosh, if we give them more food, they're going to overeat it, it becomes a real big deal. This is the kid who then, when they're at a birthday party or some event where the parents aren't there, they're the ones that are going, you know, really crazy over the food, you know, having lots and getting very excited over it. Then the parents might hear about it or eventually see it and say, oh, see, we've got to even buckle down even more so. And it just reinforces the problem over and over again.
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
You know, at one of the conferences where I was listening to you speak, you told the story of a husband and wife and how different they were in their approach to food.
Mm.
Do you recall that story?
I sure do, and I, it's funny. It's classic, and I still see this coming up and up and up again, and I love the diversity. So here's the classic. You know, the wife was brought up with in a dieting family where the mom had a weight problem and didn't want her daughter to have a weight problem. So there are very strict rules around eating, you know, no sugar and just, quote, healthy foods, low fat, and that kind of stuff. And to this day, this woman is battling weight issues, trust issues with eating, and so on. Her husband, on the other hand, has no weight issue. He grew up in a family where all food was basically allowed. In fact, they even had a candy drawer. You open up a drawer, and there's candy bars, whatever you want. And so to this day, he can give or take candy. You know, sometimes he'll have it, sometimes he won't, and it's not a big deal. And those are the kinds of things that end up developing. And I guess I was lucky growing up. I sometimes tell this story. I grew up where we had this amazing produce stand where my mom would buy tons of fresh fruit. And at the same time, right across the street, there was like this, I don't know, like a Hostess shop, you know, with ding-dongs and Twinkies and all that. And she'd buy just as much, you know? But the funny thing is, we were excited about having both of those, so it never became a big deal, you know?
It's such a refreshing story. I mean, it's because it's so rare.
Yeah. Well, so, yeah, yeah.
So one of the principles of intuitive eating is unconditional permission to eat any food.
Yeah.
So I would imagine that often people think that that's going to promote unhealthy eating and we're going to have more weight and health problems if we eat that way.
Absolutely. And the big fear is, oh my gosh, if you let me eat chocolate or if I let myself eat chocolate, I'm never ever going to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very, very scared. And this is one of the principles I think that's probably the most understood even among health professionals. So I want to back up a minute and describe what needs to really be in place for this to work effectively.
Oh, good.
First of all, you know, you need to be fed on a regular basis, you know, enough food and often enough. You know, if you go too long without eating or let's say not getting enough carbs, then if you're trying to make peace with, let's say, chocolate or cookies, and if you're meal hungry, you might end up eating a meal's worth of cookies or chocolate and being mortified, thinking, oh, my God, I can't control myself around this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the most important things in the beginning is to make sure that you're, you know, you are feeding your body enough food. And I got to tell you, that's something that surprises me over and over again. The people I see who think they're eating enough and they're not, and it's creating this big, vicious cycle where they're maybe kind of, you know, under-eating during the day, but they just call it dieting or kind of watching it, and then at night it catches up with them.
Yes.
So part of this is understanding your vulnerability points, and that is, you know, if you're, you know, too hungry, too stressed out, too tired, if any of these things are going on, that's kind of a tough condition to be, you know, trying to make peace with food. So I like to make sure things are kind of stable. But one of the big principles behind this, actually, there's a research principle. It's called food habituation. And what studies show over and over and over again is that the more you're exposed to food over time, the less of a big deal it is. And one of my most favorite studies on this is a pizza study they did with college kids. And, you know, what a great opportunity. You know, kids got to volunteer and eat free pizza for dinner every day for a month. Woo! At least they thought that was exciting.
They had to be lined up.
Yeah, until, like, day 27. I don't want no stinking pizza, you know? And they've done it with chocolate, they've done it with potato chips, and so on and so on. And it's not that you stop liking this food, but the emotional excitement around it is just, it's just not there. The problem, however, when someone's been chronically dieting, food stays exciting, especially the so-called no-no foods or the forbidden foods, you know?
Mm.
They're not allowed to eat them on the diet, or they're only allowed to have them in a certain way. And then when they're finally off the diet, it's so exciting, they'll probably overeat them, and then it's like, oh my gosh, I need rules in place to, you know, take care of this.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I try and help my clients do is to help them identify any period of in their lives where, you know, food wasn't such a big deal. And if they grew up in a family where they didn't have rigid rules, you know, they might describe camping trips where they went, you know, camping, had no access to fresh fruit or vegetables, and when they got home, that's something they wanted, even though it's not something that was a big deal for them. But that's the effect of, you know, deprivation.
Mm-hmm.
So the bottom line is, by making peace with food, unconditional permission to eat, what this allows the person to do for the first time is to ask themselves, wow, do I really want this candy bar? Do I really want it now? And if I eat it now, am I going to enjoy it? And it blows people away how often it's like, oh, well, I don't want to eat it right now while I'm driving. I'm not going to enjoy it as much, you know? Mm-hmm. Or the other thing that blows me away is when they start really having permission to eat and really tasting the food, they might discover, oh, I'm not so excited after all of her tater tots or birthday cake, you know, even though they've been lusting over this all of their lives and so on. And it's just a very exciting process. But I will say it's a very daunting one, and it's probably the one I get the most emails on from, you know, readers of the book.
Oh, I'll bet.
Yeah.
I'll bet. And I, because I know that in your book you kind of you give us an outline of, you know, how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But I would imagine that for some people, the attempting to do it without the assistance of a guide,
mm-hmm,
could just be really frightening.
It could. And, you know, I think this is where it really depends on what their background is. If they, mm-hmm, have an eating disorder, there's no way you can do this alone.
Exactly.
If you've been a chronic dieter, ooh, it could be kind of tough. And I got to tell you, I'm really excited to say, there are intuitive eating support groups that are popping up literally all over the world. Free support groups, you know, online or just in person. And see, and this, here's another thing to look at, too. You know, one thing that intuitive eating does that's so differently from dieting, although there are a lot of different things, is really asking you to start to connect and identify with what is a satisfying food experience. You know, if you had chocolate for a meal, do you really like how that feels? You know, because you see, once you remove the guilt involved, because there's so much guilt around, you know, eating these kinds of foods, that, in fact, I have to just say for a minute, when there's so much guilt around eating these kinds of foods, but let's say you feel physically yucky eating like just all chocolate or just all like cheesecake for a meal, that might feel physically yucky, but when someone's got so much profound guilt going on, they kind of merge together, and now guilt has this physical feeling. Guilt becomes somatized. Once we can get rid of that guilt, all is left is the physical sensation, and you get to ask, oh, do I like how this feels?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's kind of a bittersweet story I tell. This recent Christmas, I told my patients, guess what I had for lunch? And they said, what? I said, I had candy. And they looked at me and they were floored. And I said, you know what? I really didn't enjoy it. And the bottom line is, this was the first Christmas that my mom wasn't here and my dad was, you know, hosting it. And he had a beautiful buffet of all these, you know, holiday candies and goodies. And we're supposed to have an early dinner, late lunch kind of thing, but the food was 4 hours late.
Oh, no.
You know, he didn't have, you know, the stuff that my mom might also have out, like, you know, cheese and nuts,
sure,
and that kind of stuff. And you know what? It was really, really an unsatisfying way to eat. But again, when you're feeling so guilty, people don't look at that, you know?
Yes.
And when something doesn't feel good, you generally don't want to repeat it, especially if you know, oh, I can have chocolate anytime I want to. Do I really want this for a meal? You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Now, you mentioned support groups, and I'm going to put you on the spot because I have no idea if you even know the answer to this.
Mm.
But is there a way that people could access them?
Oh, absolutely. We have a website, intuitiveeating.org.
Oh, thank
and
you.
We have a whole page there on support groups that are popping up. I mean, there's some in New Zealand. There's some in the UK. And what's nice with these online support groups, you can be anywhere in the world, and they're free. And, you know, and they just kind of chat amongst themselves, you know, about what's going on, what their struggles are, or what's working and what's not. And I find it really exciting.
It is exciting. I'm thrilled that that's happening.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
You've helped initiate a complete movement.
Well, you know, I think what happens is, you know, a person gets to a point where they hit what I call dieting bottom, and that's when they truly know they can just not go on another diet, and it doesn't work. You know, it's one thing if dieting was effective and it was just like a real pain in the butt, you know,
mm-hmm,
but it doesn't even work. And so you get in this really stuck place of, oh, my gosh, what do I do? And there's such a desperation that they'll consider intuitive eating, you know? And I don't mean that in a discouraging way towards the work we do, but, you know the one thing I'll tell people up front, intuitive eating is a process, meaning you're not going to lose 10 pounds in a week. I don't even know if you're going to lose weight, and I can't even tell you what's going to go on with your body. And while the work is exciting and there is transformation in a person doing this work, in a way, it's kind of like watching your old-fashioned clock. You know, you can see the little hand at 2 o'clock, and by the time it moves around to 3 o'clock, you don't really see that little hand move from the 2 to the 3, even though it certainly has been, you know, doing work. And that's what intuitive eating can feel like.
Oh, that is so exciting.
Mm.
Oh,
yeah.
No wonder you love your work.
Well, yeah, you know what it is, too, is if you think about the amount of negative energy, worry, and anxiety that goes around eating. You know, eating is so much part of our culture, most cultures, really. And to have that go away, you are now connecting more with the people that you're with. You're engaged in life at a more, authentic level. And it's just really cool. And you get to the point, too, and this to me is really sad, and I see this over and over again.
Hold that thought, because we're going to stay tuned for more from Evelyn Triboli. Thank you.
Okay.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Savor yourself. Get more information on eating disorders and body image issues at andreasvoice.org. To purchase Doris's critically acclaimed book, Andrea's Voice, Silenced by Bulimia, go to andreasvoice.org, the GERS Books website at bulimia.com, or any bookstore.
Painful feet can affect our ability to enjoy the most basic activities in our daily lives, like walking your dog or cleaning your house, not to mention any physical activities you engage in. Thankfully, Dr. Larry Score brings to Voice America Health and Wellness Channel timely advice and resources to get you back on your feet and feeling great.
Cut loose, cut loose.
Don't miss There's No Business Like Toe Business every Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Everybody, cut loose.
Jack,
he'll get you right back to your head.
JackLaLanne.com presents Jack LaLanne Live on the Voice America Health and Wellness Radio Network. Each week, Jack is joined by Elaine LaLanne and his nephew, bodybuilder, kinesiologist, and personal trainer, Chris LaLanne, to answer your questions and help you overcome your fitness roadblocks. That's three times the diet and fitness know-how. Three times the entertainment. Tune in every Monday morning at 9 a.m. Pacific to Jack LaLanne Live on the Voice America Health and Wellness Radio Network.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Take another look and see I'm beautiful. Beautiful is me.
Welcome back to Savor Yourself Beyond Skin Deep with host Doris Smeltzer. If you have a question or comment for Doris, write to her at doris@savoryourself.org. Now back to today's show.
Welcome back. We are talking to Evelyn Triboli, dietitian extraordinaire, who, by the way, qualified for the Olympic trials in the first ever women's marathon in 1984. I think that is so impressive.
Well, I thought that was really exciting back then. I mean, up until that point, women were only allowed to run up to like 1,500 meters. You know, God forbid you might pass out or something.
Oh, my gosh, we have come a long way, haven't we?
Yeah, we really have.
So you were talking about how people are concerned about how other people think that they're eating?
And I'm not sure if it's just the community that I live in, you know, kind of a, or that I work in, kind of Newport Beach area, but then again, I hear this all across the country, and that is, let's say someone's going out to, a meal with their friends, and sometimes they'll order what they will perceive is a healthier meal because it makes them look good, not because it's what they want. And that ends up becoming a very unsatisfying eating experience. And ultimately, it's like, oh, what are they going to think about me because I'm eating this on my plate? I've even seen this translate into grocery shopping. Oh, what is that person going to think because I've got this in my cart? And these, strangers and friends. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, well, why do you care?
Right.
And I know that sounds simplistic, but the point is that they do. And I find over and over again, people who are uncomfortable about their eating will often put on what I call a false food face socially, you know? They might eat differently. They're not eating to their true selves. And they're also often comparing what other people around them are eating and making huge assumptions. It's like, oh, wow, well, she's pretty fit, and she only had a salad and, you know, one crouton. But we don't know what this person had to eat, you know, before the meal. You know, they might have already had a meal beforehand, was eating lighter, and so on. So that's a biggie, and that is not comparing what you're eating to what other people are eating, because everyone has different, you know, needs.
Yes. Now, is that one of the biggest difficulties that is faced when people try to become intuitive eaters?
You know, on some level, yes, and here's what it is. Even for those who don't care necessarily what other people think, they might get unsolicited comments like, Oh, how can you be eating that donut? I thought you're trying to lose weight. Oh, my gosh, how come you're eating that bacon? I thought you don't want to have a heart attack, you know, and not looking at the big picture. And what's really tough for people is when they're new to the intuitive eating process, and even though they know it's making sense and it's working for them, when they're still kind of new at it, it's hard to explain because it sounds so counter. It's a paradox, you know. What do you mean, you know, eating a donut's healthy? And I look at it, the way I like to explain it is like we're working on having a healthy relationship with food, meaning one food, one meal, one day is not going to make or break your health, your waistline, and more importantly, it's not a morality issue. You know, I find I often share my food stories with patients around the things that will shock them, like, yeah, I had a donut the other day, da-da-da-da. I don't talk about the tofu I might eat or, you know, those kinds of things. But the point is that you can have a variety of all kinds of foods and still value health and be healthy.
Yes, you sure can. Now, was it Ellen? I'm wondering if it was Ellen Satter, or maybe it was in your book, because you just said you have to look at the big picture, and that jogged my memory that I remember reading somewhere that actually our nutritional needs are met over the period of about a month.
Oh, you mean by most people or kids?
Yeah.
That
we don't have to, that it's not what I eat just today.
Oh, got it. You know what? You are so right. And actually, you know what? When all these public health recommendations come down in terms of like, oh, you know, fruits and vegetables, eat these all the time and have this much amount of fat or cut this or cut that, they're really referring to an average over time. And the average over time is at least a week. And so what I try and help my patients with is like, you know, when you're looking at your eating, let's say you're not thrilled about how the day went for you, step back for a moment and let's look at what the last week's been like or what's the last 3 days. And when you put that into context, what does that look like, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very important thing. And people sometimes have big difficulty looking at that. It's almost as if it becomes like this all-or-none thing, you know, which leads to its own life cycle of problems.
It sure does.
Yeah.
So how can you tell the difference between emotional hunger and physical hunger, and what are those two?
Well, you know, it, in the beginning, it can be very tricky and very, very, very foggy. And the way I like to approach this is I think it's much easier to become clear about what physical hunger is, because that has kind of a known sensation. And when you're clear about that, then everything else is everything else.
Uh-huh.
It's emotional, or it could be other kinds of things. So here's the way I like to do it. Is having someone get connected back with their body. We are living in such a disconnected state of being, you know, with all this multitasking that we're doing. If you're someone who tends to eat and do other things at the same time, you know, eat and watch TV, eat and read your email, eat and read the paper, you're checking out, you know? And I see this a lot, especially with professionals, or maybe they're just putting in a crazy day at work. They truly, you know, will say that they do not feel hungry, but boy, the moment they sit down at a restaurant or at home, all of a sudden this big ravenous appetite comes out of nowhere.
Uh-huh.
Well, the truth is, it was there all the time. They just weren't really connected to it. So part of the beginning is doing what I call taking your vital signs, you know, checking in every 2-3 hours, you know, what's my hunger like? And it might think, I don't know, well, rate it on a scale of 1 to 10 and get your best shot, and after a time they'll have some meaning. What's your hunger like? What's your energy like? Do I need to go to the bathroom? And I know that might sound really silly, but getting in touch with those, with a physical sensation like that, that you clearly know what that's like, that again, that's helping you to connect.
Uh-huh.
Then, when we get into the issue of emotional hunger, you know, one way of distinguishing it is, you know, am I biologically hungry? And if the answer is yes, well, that suggests, okay, let's go find, you know, something to eat or meet my needs. And if the answer is no, we might be looking at, you know, some kind of emotional type of eating. And you know where I find it's really tricky is when it's in those kind of quiet emotional states. For example, if someone's really angry or really stressed out, it's pretty clear what they're experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, yeah, you know, I ate a cake because I'm just so mad at my boss. But some of the little ones that really get people, and they don't recognize it in a way, it's a kind of emotional eating, is what I call the void, the nothingness void, where maybe you've got a couple minutes, not enough time to check email or return voicemail, and all of a sudden you've got this craving for candy. You know, it just seems like, oh, you just have to go to the vending machine. But if it's a pattern where that's something you do when there's this little bit of nothingness, you know, it could be related to that.
Uh-huh.
So part of it is getting to know your body and getting to know your, when I say your vital signs, you know, how's your energy level, all that kind of stuff. That one takes a while. And I find it takes really getting, you know, connected to your body. If you're not getting enough sleep, it's sometimes kind of hard to tell. You know, is it physical or is it emotional? Because if you're really tired, you know, your hunger kind of shuts down as well.
And you mentioned keeping, you know, noticing, is it a pattern?
Yeah.
And I would think that for some people, they actually, it might even help to keep a little journal or something to jot down.
You know, absolutely, and I have to, you know, do a special little word about journaling. I'm so cautious when I ask people about how do you feel about, you know, journaling your eating experiences, because so many dieters have used journals as tools to beat themselves up because they weren't perfect. And I look at this as a tool that serves you, and it's a tool of curiosity. You know, like, what's going on? We don't have any judgment. We're just kind of, you know, observing what's going on here. And you know, the bottom line is, you know, something happens once in a while, it's not a big deal. When it's a chronic pattern, then we need to look at it. And I think, this is so ironic, I've had a lot of emails where, and I've seen this talked about in professional circles as well, where they have now kind of tried to turn intuitive eating unknowingly into another diet with rigid rules. And it might be something like this. Ooh, I ate when I wasn't hungry, so I'm an emotional eater. Or that was wrong. It's like, no. You know, it's not like our bodies are like these on and off switches. We are built to be in a constant flux, you know? So let's say you weren't hungry and you ate, you know, in the afternoon. Well, maybe that means when dinner rolls around, you're not going to be as hungry as you normally are, you know, at dinner time. And it's just really amazing how those things can be interpreted. So it's not a rigid way of doing anything.
I love that. Kind of going with the flow.
Yeah, or I've had some patients, especially teenagers, you know, I ate at a boredom. I got home from school and I was so bored and I snacked on this, and I'll say, well, let's back up here. You know, what'd you have for breakfast? What time was your lunch? And I'll ask, well, you know, were you hungry when this was going? Oh, yeah, I was really hungry. Well, it turned out they were really hungry and they were bored. And they want to label it as emotional eating. It's like, well, no, your body was hungry. You just happened to be bored at the same time. You know, it doesn't mean that you're an emotional eater. But that's the other thing, too, is I would hate for someone to, you know, start labeling themselves as like an emotional eater or compulsive eater out of control when it's maybe just a normal consequence of not eating. In fact, I'll never forget this, and I see this as a pattern with some patients I'll see. You know, they'll come in, they'll tell me they're a compulsive overeater, they can't stop eating, blah, 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 blah. And as I'm taking their history, what starts to become real apparent to me is, oh, they're not a compulsive overeater. They compulsively don't feed themselves often enough, or they skip meals. And when you get too ravenous, you will get a very intense sensation of hunger. And it might feel like it's a binge intensity. In fact, I'll never forget, I do a lot of hiking, and this particular hiking group I belong to, different people come in and out, and there was this physicist in the group, and you know, he found out what I did for a living, and he starts telling me how, gosh, when he goes on a diet, then he'll end up binging afterwards. And so I looked at him, and I said, well, do you have a PhD in physics? And he said, yeah. I said, well, you know what? Every cell in your body does not know you have a PhD and they don't care. It's about survival, and your cells are just in this primal state of hunger, you know?
Yes.
So it's not necessarily so obvious what's going on.
I love that. That is so true. All our bodies know is, am I being nourished?
That's right. That's right.
Oh, and often enough.
Right.
We have about 1 minute till break, and I wanted to ask you, because this is something that I found many people who suffer with eating disorders do. They carry a food bag with them. And can you just comment about that? Because I actually have started doing that, and I find it incredibly helpful so that when I am hungry, I can honor my hunger immediately.
Right, right. And what that is carrying a food bag, in other words, just having food on you, is, number one, if you get hungry, as you said, you allow yourself to eat. Or, let's say you just have a crazy day. Life can be crazy, and you really had planned on, you know, stopping by and picking something to eat. At least if you've got something to kind of bridge your gap, you don't get into that real vulnerable place where, I'm going to kill you if I don't get that pizza or whatever it happens to be. Yeah.
Oh. That is so true. Okay, don't go away. We will be back.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Savor yourself. Get more information on eating disorders and body image issues at AndreasVoice.org. to purchase Doris's critically acclaimed book, Andrea's Voice, Silenced by Bulimia, go to andreasvoice.org, the GERS Books website at bulimia.com, or any bookstore.
Mom?
Dad?
How long should I wait for you?
Mom?
If I'm at soccer practice.
What if something happens? Will you come get me?
Should I stay where I am and wait for you? Or go to Grandma's house since it's closer?
Shouldn't we pick a place to meet?
There's no reason not to have a plan in case of a terrorist attack.
Mom, if you're not home, should we go to the neighbor's house?
How do we keep in touch with each other if the phones don't work?
Should I be worried how we all get home?
And some extremely good reasons why you should.
Can you tell me?
Everybody should have a plan. Take 5 minutes to talk about where you'll meet and how you'll get in touch with each other in an emergency. For other things you can do to be prepared, visit www.ready.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Tune in on Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Healing the Grieving Heart, the program that takes you on a journey through grief after the death of a child. Join Dr. Gloria Horsley, marriage and family therapist and bereaved parent, while she interviews and discusses with other bereaved parents and siblings how they have coped with the death of a child and gone on to create and realize new dreams. So tune in Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Healing the Grieving Heart with Dr. Gloria Horsley, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness. The incidence of autism has increased at an alarming rate. Autism One, a conversation of hope, hosted by Betsy Hicks, illuminates how right now there is more reason than ever for individuals with autism spectrum disorders and their families to have the best hope for the brightest future. Autism is treatable, and given appropriate therapies, children are recovering. With well-known researchers and doctors, members of Congress, and expert service providers from a wide range of disciplines, Betsy offers interviews and insights highlighting the progress in areas related to autism spectrum disorders, such as biomedical research and treatment, communication, education, and behavioral modalities, adult services, sociological and philosophical issues, and legislative advocacy and insurance concerns. Autism One, a conversation of hope, broadcast each Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Autism One, a conversation of hope. Through education and conversation, there is hope.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Take another look and see I'm beautiful. Beautiful is me.
Welcome back to Savor Yourself Beyond Skin Deep with host Doris Smeltzer. If you have a question or comment for Doris, write to her at doris@savoryourself.org. Now back to today's show.
We are back with Evelyn Triboli, registered dietitian specializing in eating disorders. And I have to share with you, Evelyn's favorite food happens to be chocolate when it can be savored slowly. Isn't that the truth?
Well, yeah, I want to have it when I can enjoy it. Absolutely.
And it's just so
I won't
true.
Settle. And that's what I try and teach my patients, is not to settle for the quality of food or how you're going to eat it, you know? Not that every eating experience is going to be a 10, but to the times when you really can, it really should be.
Yes, and I love it because it truly is savoring the food.
Yeah.
And that becomes a way of savoring ourselves.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny. I find it something that most Americans really don't know how to do because we're not taught that, you know. It's either let's hurry up and get it because we got to go to, you know, practice, we got to go to school, you know, hurry and take down the food. Or there's this fear sometimes, and I hear over and over again, that, wow, if I really enjoy what I eat, then I'm going to want more. And the fact is, it's actually the opposite, and that is when you're enjoying what you eat and you're really satisfied, boom, you're finished. You know, you're not on the prowl. You're not looking for more to find that missing spot that wasn't, you know, completed from an inadequate meal.
Yeah. I've also noticed that if I'm really enjoying the food and really tasting it, it slows me down.
You know what? You're absolutely right. And, you know, it's ironic. I'm sure you're familiar with some of the old, you know, quote, behavior modification techniques for weight management. You know, one of them was, you know, well, put your fork down between bites. And by the way, I never cared for that because it seemed so, I don't know, robotic. It didn't seem real to me. But that it's true that technique might help slow you down, but why even do it? Well, it's the reason why a long time ago I started to have my patients focus on the taste of food. In other words, when they're eating something, well, how does it taste? Does this food taste meet your expectations? Is it taste bud worthy? And as you're going along, is it still tasting good? Is there a shift in how this is tasting? How is your body feeling? How are you experiencing this food? And when you're processing food that way, it's not mechanical. It's actually quite enjoyable, and I'll tease them, and I'll say, you know, I want you to come back and be like you're the New York Times food critic. I want to hear about your eating experiences, you know?
Mm-hmm. I love this story you told about the one of your clients who she was always craving and I think even binging on chocolate kisses until she took the time to really taste the chocolate kiss?
Well, two things happened. Is one, she gave herself permission, because before it was always like, you know, well, I'm going to have just one, and I'm going to hurry up and eat it before I catch myself and maybe have another. And so one, she finally gave herself permission to eat it, and then two, going through the savoring process, I had her, you know, see how long she can make a chocolate kiss last in her mouth and see how it tasted, what was the texture like, what was the mouth feel. And she was blown away. She came back and said, oh, this was kind of gritty and kind of waxy. I just started laughing. I said, well, because you're actually describing kind of, you know, mediocre chocolate, not to knock Hershey's, but there's a huge difference between that, let's say, a piece of Godiva or even like, you know, like a Dove chocolate or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And I think what has happened is, you know, there's been so much morality tied around food. It's like, well, God forbid you have something that's really a 10 in taste and satisfaction, because, you know, once it's chocolate, it's like, oh, you know, it's wrong. I can get it over with. Yeah, as opposed to, you know, buy the best.
Yes. So describe what is dubbed the Last Supper Syndrome.
Oh, Last Supper eating. It's something I describe, a phenomenon that goes on over and over again when someone is about to go on a diet. It's kind of like their last farewell to food. You know, they truly believe in their heart of hearts, and that's the important part. They really believe they're never going to have these foods again. So you get them now, and then you're going to just, that's going to be it. And as a result, instead of having, you know, one piece of pie, it might be half a pie or a whole pie because you're never going to have it again. And, you know, I really started seeing this happen a lot in the beginning of my profession, because patients would come in, and I would typically ask them, well, you know, tell me what your day of eating was like, or tell me what your last week. And they'll start by saying, oh, but this is not how I really eat. And then they'll go on and tell me about, you know, the hamburgers and french fries and shakes and whatnot. And I said, well, what's the typical way you eat, and why was this different? And invariably they say, oh, because I was coming to see you, and I thought you were going to tell me I can never have these foods again.
Oh, no.
I mean, it's not funny. It's just, again, it's a phenomenon I see over and over and over again. And that's why if you know you can really have a food whenever you want it, you know, gosh, it changes how much you need to have in the here and now, even if you want it at all.
That makes so much sense.
Yeah, yeah.
It really does. Now, we had talked about this a little bit during one of the breaks, and I'd love for you to share with our listeners about how childhood diabetes and intuitive eating, and you could even cover childhood obesity. Yeah, right.
Well, you know what? You're absolutely right. They go hand in hand, because it's one of the kind of fear-mongering things that goes on. It's like, oh, my gosh, if your kid's overweight, you know, you might get childhood, you know, diabetes and so on and so on. And I was sharing with you at the break that I was just at I was speaking at the Diabetic Educators Conference in Salt Lake City for the Utah Diabetic Educators. And these are people who specialize in teaching people how to manage their blood sugars and stay healthy and also get their blood sugar in a you know, nice, healthy range.
Uh-huh.
And the thing that was so cool is, number one, they really wanted to hear about intuitive eating, but number two, they really knew that was the way to go, because involving rigid rules around eating, even when you're a diabetic, doesn't work. And medications have changed so much, there's really a way to manage it all. And if you do it as a team approach, where the patient's really part of the team, the outcome is just so much different. It was actually a very exciting conference to be part of.
Gosh, I'll bet. It sounds amazing.
What I find is when people are scared, they tend to go to, like, the most strictest interpretation of whatever the guidelines are, you know, whether it's a parent being scared or whether it's a health professional that's new for the first time working with, you know, diabetics or something like that. But the more knowledgeable someone is, they know what the play and the flux is and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very true. So tell me, is there anything you haven't shared yet that you'd like our listeners to be sure to hear? We have 4 minutes.
Well, you know, I think it's...
Actually, three.
It's really important that, number one, you just really enjoy eating, that it's not mutually exclusive. You can enjoy eating and be healthy. We haven't talked much about activity.
But when it comes
to, you know, physical activity and exercise and whatnot, it's so important, again, that it's something that you enjoy. If you're doing something just to burn calories, you're going to end up being disappointed when you're not seeing what the effect is that you think you should be seeing. And it takes you away from the joy impact of movement, you know. Because if you're a social person, you might be someone who would rather do something in a group, like, you know, hiking or playing basketball or something like that, as opposed to, you know, sitting on a, you know, bike, you know, plugged into some outlet and, you know, pedaling away. It needs to be something you can do for the rest of your life and enjoy.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that makes so much sense.
Mm-hmm. The other thing, too, I think is real important, and I want to be real clear, I really do value health. I value nutritious eating, and it's something that can be done. You can still eat. I've had patients say, well, when can I start eating healthy? I was like, well, anytime you want to. It's not mutually exclusive, but what happens in the beginning, you're working on all this transition of making peace with food and the pendulum kind of swings. It's so exciting, you're trying all these new things. And then once you get to that point where you really know you can have it, that's when all the other stuff kind of makes its way in as well.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I guess the key there is looking at rigidity, you know. Rigidity with eating doesn't work. The only time I think it really does matter is if you have like an allergy, then of course, absolutely. You know, if you're allergic to peanuts, you're not going to even have a nano trace of something like that. But other than that, you know, we need to look at being flexible with our eating.
I know that you once shared also about your son it's not an allergy, it's a condition.
Oh, yeah, my son has celiac disease, and that's another example where the only way you can treat it is through a gluten-free diet, and there's no middle ground on that. The nice thing, you know, I've always tried, I use the same principles of intuitive eating with him, and a funny story I love to tell is, you know, you can't have any flour, and I wanted him to be socially connected at school, and they have birthday parties and cakes all the time. So at the beginning of every school year, I give the teacher a case of peanut M&Ms, because that's something he can have. And one day at home, he said something to me like, Mom, there's nothing to eat. And I think he was like, you know, 8 or 10, so I wouldn't expect him to get into the freezer and, you know, whip up a meal or something. And I was thinking, yeah, I got to go grocery shopping. And I remember yelling and saying, hey, go have some peanut M&Ms. He goes, I don't want any. And the reason I love that story is because he's so used to having them, it's not a big deal.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Oh, Evelyn, thank you so much. You know what? The last question, though, real quick, in your personal life, what are the ways that you savor yourself?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I try and have some stillness in the day. I try and meditate. Unless I say try. I'm not perfect at it, but I try and stay mindful in what I'm doing, whether I'm driving or whether I'm walking, and staying present. And also, in terms of savoring myself, I often do that by savoring my friendships and relationships.
Mm. Thank you, Evelyn. It has been a delight speaking with you.
Thank you.
And thank you, listeners. I look forward to spending time with you next week when Jenny Schaefer joins us to talk about her experience of life without Ed. Jenny's therapist taught her to treat her eating disorder as a relationship rather than an illness or condition, hence the name Ed as an acronym for eating disorders. Tune in and hear how she divorced Ed. If you have questions or comments for me or any of our guests, remember to write me at doris@savoryourself.org. Let us close with Andrea's opening words, where she quotes her 14-year-old self's favorite newspaper clipping. So go for your dreams, dear reader, and let me know what happens. Until next week, may you go for your dreams as you remember to savor yourself.
Take another look and see I'm beautiful. Beautiful is me.
We appreciate you spending this hour with Doris Smeltzer and Savor Yourself. If you would like to learn more about eating disorder prevention, visit our site at andreasvoice.org. That's andreasvoice.org. And be sure to tune in next week for more valuable tips on how to dare to go beyond skin deep and to truly savor yourself. We'll see you next Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Health and Wellness Channel.